There you go. Okay, well, everybody join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance.
Did you want to state the time again since we just started the recording?
Sorry. It is now 6:32. Okay, join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. So roll call, we have Commissioner Huggins, Commissioner Freiberger, Commissioner Fatizzi, Commissioner Maddox, Commissioner Frenette, and Commissioner Penno, all present. Commissioner Johnson is currently not here, but if he gets here later on, we'll just make a note to that. So has everybody, had the ability to take a look at the May 18th meeting minutes? There's only one change on page two. We have Commissioner Higgins instead of Commissioner Huggins.
Just don't call me late for dinner.
Okay. So on that second sentence, Commissioner Higgins instead of Huggins spoke in favor of the Northwest style designs. So that's all I have. Does anyone else have any comments on the meeting minutes? Do I have a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion, we approve the minutes.
Commissioner Penno makes the first motion to approve. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Commissioner Freiberger seconds, motion passes. And we now move on to general public comments. So John, it would be a mail-in kind of thing. Did you get anything or?
Well, we've changed it up a little bit. First, I've changed it to say people can make comments during this time.
Okay.
But we've also given the opportunity for mail-in or email. And we have not received any mailed or emailed comments.
Okay, you know, I just looked at that. Yeah, I'm just, my brain is still wired to the past. So if anyone is in the audience that is dialed in and would like their 3 minutes to have any comments, we'd like to hear you. And if not, okay, I will now close the general comments section at 6:34 p.m. So moving on to unfinished business. Updates to the Cedro-Woolley Design Review Standards and Guidelines Manual to address buildings in the Central Business District. So I'm sure everyone's probably taken a look at what was included in the packet. So John, why don't you take it from here before we get into it?
All right. Well, this is a little different than the packet that you saw. Oh, there's Eric.
Okay, let it be noted that Commissioner Johnson is now present at 6:35 p.m.
All right, so Commissioner Johnson did not miss anything besides the Pledge of Allegiance and approving the minutes. We are just about to start discussion of the agenda item. The unfinished business, the updates to the Cedro-Woolley design standards. So last month we canceled the meeting because most of the Planning Commission could not be here. So we took that opportunity to do some further work on the design standards from that time until now. So if you looked at these back in June, these updates look a little different. The main changes, we still haven't got to a whole lot of substantive stuff. Catherine was working on this and her time became very valuable and started to run out of time to do all of these, but what we really noticed is when you look at each of the design standards chapters, you know, the additional standards for the UVMU, the general standards, the additional standards for multifamily, et cetera, they all have like guidelines, standards in sections broken down in bullets. And then you look at the additional standards for the central business district as it's written, and it's mostly a narrative. And that narrative, kind of throughout the narrative, there's the occasional standard hidden in there. And so we began a process to reformat how it was written. So we think a lot of the narrative that was there was important, because it paints a picture and describes what the city is interested in and gives some backdrop to the past development in the central business district. But then frankly, this is one of the difficulties that staff had administrating this, is there wasn't really anything to look at and say, well, you shall do this, this, and this. Buildings need to have these aspects and those aspects. And so we went through and reformatted it so we can make it more like the existing, the other chapters in the design standards. So that's why you'll see, you know, new standards and guidelines for a general storefront profile. And then some additional standards for awnings, and then doors and windows. So we mimicked what the rest of the design standards look like. A lot of the effort was focused on taking what we already had in there and rewording it and putting it out there for the Planning Commission, or for anyone, any reader, not just the Planning Commission, to be able to go through the design, the standards for the Central Business District, and be able to look at that bullet points and make sense out of it. So there wasn't a whole lot of new added to it, and the Planning Commission's been giving ideas of what they wanted to see in the design standards, and we tried to incorporate those. So if we've missed any of those, or if we misinterpreted what the Planning Commission was asking to be put in, let us know. I recognize that this still needs a lot of work. You can see that nothing for signs has been done, sign design. And nothing for the last section, sign lighting hasn't really been touched. And we also recognize that there's other sections in each of the other design standards sections that need to be drawn over into this. We were just addressing some of the existing ones and starting from there. So there's still a lot of work to do. I apologize to the Planning Commission for not having more for you to review. I recognize your time is valuable and want to bring you a lot of good information to review. And this is much lighter than we had intended for it to be. But we do have something for the Planning Commission to review. We would love your feedback on it. How you think this is going, how you think it's being built so far, if that seems good, and just any other discussion items that you've come up come up with. I've one thing to talk about as far as new stuff going on in the CBD. There's been some painting of downtown-ish building or CBD buildings. And I wanted to get the Planning Commission's input on the new paint jobs also. So that's about all I have to present to the Planning Commission on this new design standards update. So I was hoping to have a little bit of conversation about it and get some more direction and feedback.
Who wants to go first?
Well, I guess I'll go if that's okay. First, I wanted to say I really like how it's been reformatted. It struck me when I was reading through it that it was just too conversational and anecdotal. So reorganizing it to be consistent with the other parts of the code seems very, it makes sense. It was interesting to me how you just reorganized it and it just flowed better and was really, it made more sense. As you said, it's easier to see what exactly we're looking for in the way of requirements versus suggestions, basically, for that.
John, I actually pulled the design standards manual to follow it along because I got a little bit lost in like the third page when that elements listed A through J, but it was no big deal. So on M, I mean, the whole thing that kind of started this discussion was the garage door style thing. So on M, we have large operable window and or doors that create dynamic usable space, interface of public and private space for dining, seating, retail, or similar. So is it here that you potentially want to insert some language on the type of window or doors? Or are we just being general at this point? And as we get deeper down into the guidelines, that's where we'll define the actual material slash construction of what we're looking for.
But no, that should be here. So
I mean, we like the fact that we can move this stuff around, but where do you want to define the go ahead.
I see what you're saying. So well, first of all, yes, I'll add A through J just to make it easier to follow. Instead of having the reader have to go back to the general standard.
That was no big deal, though. It made me look too, so that's fine.
But you know, do you think it would be better if I did it that way? If we added A through J to that, would that be easier for everybody?
I think so. Just to Joe's comment, we have a whole section on doors and windows, and it seems to me like the specific requirements for the materials and style of those items, it makes sense to leave all that in the doors and windows section as opposed to cluttering up this checklist sort of section.
I agree.
Just my...
I agree with Silas, and as far as listing A through J, at the minimum, put as seen on page 14 of the design standard, so they have a place to go back to.
Yeah, I'll probably just list them because as we make amendments over the years, pages change. So it's tough to direct the reader to a specific page because that may change over time.
So I'm just assuming that when we're done with this, which is going to take a little bit of time, the current manual has replaced by the November 2018 update. So this will replace that with whatever we come up with in 2021. I'm just assuming that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, what I anticipate doing is on the cover. Right now it says adopted 2004, updated 2018. I just changed that 2021 to change it from 2018 to 2021.
Are we being aggressive on that?
Oh, I think we can get this done in 2021.
It's been a...
You're bringing up an interesting point that's off topic, but you know, I do when we get to the Planning Commission discussion items, I want to talk to you all about what's going on. You know, it's been a little bit berserk in the development industry lately. So, and in our office part in particular. So I want to give you an update of just what's going on in the planning and building department. So don't let me forget to do that.
John, just a kind of a question. I see that the paragraph right above the standards for under general storefront front profile, the one that talks about the Art Nouveau
emerging. The one that starts generally speaking.
Yes.
And you're probably so wondering why is it underlined when it's existing language?
No, I see that it was moved, but I'm kind of wondering just the way it flows, if it might some reference, if maybe not the whole paragraph needs to go right after the intent, because when it says historically storefront architecture in the Northwest, it kind of is vague there. And it's like, it's explained later that it was that style, but you're kind of left going, okay, when are we talking here? So maybe even just a reference, like it's later referenced that 1900 to 1930 is kind of what we're looking at here. Just, I don't know if it's really necessary to clarify, because it is clarified later on, but it just was something I was thinking about. Does that make sense or not?
No, if it should be moved up earlier to flow better, that makes sense. What's interesting is it used to be the last paragraph in this sentence and it got moved up a little. So you're recommending that we put it before which paragraph?
So right after the first paragraph in intent under general storefront profile and before the second paragraph that starts historically, I don't know, then maybe that paragraph would be somewhat redundant. It seemed like a background paragraph. And so it's odd to put it later on when you're talking about what defines that era, but haven't defined the era until later on. So.
I'll play around with it and see if that, if I can make it flow better. I may just have to, you know, rewrite a lot of it to just make it flow better.
Also, I noticed at paragraph, five. So it's the bottom of page 10, that paragraph that starts special decorative attention at entries is significant. That last line is partially deleted, but only partially. So it's a partial sentence. Fronts also often displayed, and then dental detailing of cast masonry or brick or combinations of masonry, that part is crossed out. So so I don't know if there's something else that's supposed to go there or if that whole thing is supposed to be deleted.
I'll have to reread it and see. Maybe I can have Catherine work on it when she's on the plane. I've threatened to give her work for her flight a bunch while she was during her last few days. So it's kind of an inside joke. Sorry about that.
We are going to miss her.
Yeah.
It's a long speech. You need something to do anyway.
Any more suggestions, requests, direction?
How do you spell dining? It looks like dinning, number in M.
D-I-N-I-N-G, dining.
I think there's one too many N's in dining.
Thank you.
Well, can I talk about awnings for a second? In the last meeting, you talked about marquees being different than awnings, and I couldn't find where it talked about that other than it's preferable to have them fixed, but the word wasn't there. Now I gotta find it. Okay, I found it. Under guidelines of just before doors and windows, it says guidelines for awnings encouraged. Number two, permanent awnings constructed of wood or metal and that meet all other design review standards are encouraged. Could we use the word marquee if that's a standard word in architecture?
I'll look into it.
Okay.
Did we want to define or differentiate between canopies and awnings or make the comment that they're similar? I don't know. That was a note I had based on the Snohomish standards that we looked at last time.
So according to the Snohomish standards that canopies are different than awnings and they define both of those?
I need to look back at that. I just had a note here that about it. So perhaps I should not comment further until I look up the Snohomish one and see what exactly it had said.
Sounds reasonable. Sounds legit to me.
One more question on awnings. We were talking about which style of, how do I say this, design standards look the best from the other cities. I know we were all putting a word in for one place or another, why it was good or bad. Are we going to add photos or drawings or anything to these to clarify what we're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Right now, I just wanted to get the bones done, and then comes the fun part of, you know, looking for pictures, taking photos, and what inevitably happens is when you start putting photos and illustrations in, it messes up the format like just all day. So I want to leave that to the end so we don't get jammed up on little formatting details like that are going to goof it up, and we'll work on that as we get closer to a finished copy. But we definitely want to have photos and illustrations and maps, and that makes it all the more readable.
Yeah. So therefore, we don't have to bend over backwards describing things if we can say, as shown in figure one or something.
I'm going to make a note for that because that's a good idea.
So I found the what I was looking at in awnings and canopies. They don't seem to really differentiate, and it was actually, it looks like Sumner. It was their guidelines. So I guess if they're not really differentiating and we just want to keep with the word we're using, it just made me think of it when the commissioner was talking about marquee. So I was just looking at that. So they reference both apparently. And I misspoke. There is actually a separate definition for awning and canopy. I don't know if it's actually worth differentiating. Apparently an awning is a fabric covered structure mounted on the face of a building above a window, entrance or storefront opening, providing weather and or sun protection. Canopy, an architectural structure made of permanent materials such as metal or wood, mounted on the face of a building above a window, entrance or storefront opening, providing weather and or sun protection. So if we're allowing both, then I don't know, do we need to define it?
I'll look into the definition of canopy because that really defined more of a marquee, and marquee is usually the architectural term used. I'd prefer, at least the way my brain understands it now, I'd prefer canopy at this time, but I'll look into canopy or marquee.
I'm seeing that canopies are considered a fabric covering for shelter for a freestanding structure such as a pergola.
Oh. So,
with the awning being one that's attached to the exterior wall to provide shade over a window, door, or patio. Canopy is considered something over a freestanding.
Oh, I like that definition. And is that also in the Sumner?
No, that's on my Google. Sorry.
And I was getting myself confused with the markings on this. That was actually in Snohomish is where I found the canopy. So was right the first time.
Oh, okay.
Apologies.
Who's running this meeting?
Oh. I'm just leaking some of the stuff. On that, back to the guidelines, fabric should be a solid color or stripe. You know, that was one of the things I believe that when the doors went up at the bullpen, it was like that bright white and the other part of the building was a totally different color. I mean, this is pretty general here that if you want to put up like a neon kind of green or whatever, I mean, is it something that we should consider that it needs to be compatible with the surrounding, with the building that it's attached to, or the surrounding buildings in general? Because I think that's the places that everybody has different awnings to stand on out. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about back in May when we were talking about horizontal modulation. I think mostly I was talking about vertical modulation of the buildings, and when you build a new building on the site or you're making major alterations, you need to be sympathetic to the modulation of the buildings on either side of you. And I was trying to figure out whether that was under standard storefront, if that was P, where it says notable building articulations vertically and horizontally, or similar architectural features that meet the intent of the section. And I wouldn't call it articulation, I'd call it modulation if that was supposed to cover it. Because you have to have it to be sympathetic. So like I was saying, if the guy had made some kind of, had the money to put in some kind of a pull down door or sliding door that, that from the, how to explain it? I'm trying to remember what building is next door to that. I think there's some 1950s buildings next door to it. So it's not a good example, but anyway, if you had another, Art Nouveau building next to it, you would try and start your windows at the same height that they started their windows at and end them at the same height that they started theirs at. And if your door goes below that, then below that, you would try and simulate what the modulation of the building was below the window. And so anyway, I think that's a really important piece of it. I mean, it's the main thing for me. If you do that and you stick with the Art Nouveau, I mean, they didn't use neon green in Art Nouveau, at least not usually on the outsides, maybe on the sign or inside. But anyway, I think if you are being true to Art Nouveau and you follow the modulation of the other buildings on either side of you, are sympathetic to them, then you're going to come out okay with your design.
Any more comments on those guidelines? And yes, Joe, I'm just letting everybody put it out there as we go through this. So feel free to comment on anything as we go down through the doors and windows now.
And since I'm yakking and nobody else piped up, I was going to ask the question. So in my mind, the marquees are the flat awnings that usually had like a movie thing above it where they had the movie sign that told you what the movies were coming, but it was sitting on a flat, that's a marquee style. Is that correct? And then awning is the kind that you can either crank up or they're fixed. But they're sloped. And then I also wanted to comment that the reason that we had allowed the fixed was at the time that we created design standards the first time, about half of the awnings in town had been replaced by fixed solid metal ones with shingles and shakes on them, you know, which was kind of unique to, there wasn't any other towns around that had shingle and shake awnings around. So it was kind of a thing. And then also the people who owned those buildings were saying, I hate awnings because I have to replace them every 3 years because they fade out and I can't afford that. And if I put in a shake roof or whatever, it lasts for 30, 40 years and I don't have to worry about it. So that was just some background on why we were allowing the fixed ones that could use wood and other things and other materials.
Oh, I see. So, so some sort of, maybe awning's not the best word, but a covered area that's not flat, but is fixed, is what you're trying to achieve, trying to allow.
Well, I think we want variety within the Art Nouveau style. I think a lot of the buildings when they were built were intended to have the flat, what I'm calling marquee awnings, because they had transom windows above them. So if you put up an awning, you block your light that would come in through the transom windows. And if you have the flat marquee type, then the light can come in through those, through the transom windows. So I suspect that all the ones that if you look up from inside the building and see where they've either painted the glass over or covered the glass over up there, those were intended to have flat marquee type awnings. And then if it didn't have that, if there were no windows up in there, then they were designed to have either a roll up or crank up awning or a fixed, canvas cloth or whatever awning. And I'd love to see some nicely done glass ones. Glass awnings are awesome.
So So two of those pitched outdoor covers have recently been removed. One was the one at the the Domino's, what's been Domino's for several years. And it was falling apart and dangerous. And so they just took it down. Another one was over next to the Sparkle Shop. There was, and this has been several years now, there was the one that was a cedar pitched awning out the front. And when they were taking it down, they were astounded that it stayed up because it was incredibly heavy. You know, maybe it was tile. It was incredibly heavy. And there really wasn't much of a structure there. So that one went away and I forget what they replaced that one with. But both were improvements because those existing ones, while cool in idea and looked good in their day, were really failing and becoming dangerous because they're overhead on a walkway could injure pedestrians.
Yeah, and so I'm not certain, but I assume that some of those were just built on top of the marquee awnings that were already there, and so they weren't specifically structurally built to hold up tiles or cedar shakes. They just kind of just tacked them on top of the marquees. So it's probably a miracle that one of them didn't come down on somebody.
Are we ready to move down to doors and windows? Any more comments on awnings, fabrics?
I had a note about noting limited number of colors on a building. I believe we talked about that previously. Was that something that we were not going to do, or it's been a while, so.
I believe it was a consistency issue that, you know, you're looking for continuity between color schemes and adjoining structures. How you actually codify something like that. I mean, here are even on the awnings, fabric should be a solid color. That's pretty general, right? And that's where you might want to put language like that in.
Once again, I think our Art Nouveau style, they didn't do a massive amount of colors. You know, like Victorian Painted Ladies had sometimes 3-4 different colors in the schemes, instead of the two tones that you would find in a normal Victorian. But I think Art Nouveau in and of itself kind of defines that it's not going to have more than probably 3 at the most.
3 is pretty typical.
By the way, I really like the new paint job at Volan, since you asked for those comments, except for their little blue sky triangles on the side street. But the front of it is, I mean, anything was an improvement, but the colors are better and the modulation of the building makes it look much, much nicer to me, to my eye now that they've painted the two tones, and turns out I like the colors too. So
should we look at creating something that prohibits a blue that is not in the same color palette as, you know, the rest of the colors? What we're seeing is consistently with blue on the buildings downtown, not sure if the blue is a very successful color, even though it is the cedral woolly blue often. I don't know, what does the Planning Commission think about how blue fits in with the historic downtown?
Okay, well, I'll pipe in again. So I like the blue, and I like, because I grew up here, but it's a good blue, but I don't think it goes with Art Nouveau. And yet everybody's going to want to use it because it shows support for the for our schools and the district. So I don't know how you're going to, I don't know how you're going to word that. You know, maybe it can't be in the building paint job, but it can be in, you know, ad and window displays and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's probably the direction I would go. But anyway.
I mean, is it a concern of the Planning Commission of, you know, the historic buildings using maybe not specifically the blue, but it often ends up being that particular blue. I mean, is there any concern or do we not worry about it?
What would be an example of a building that you would take and make it into that Cub blue or do something on a storefront that would stick out and not blend in with what we're trying to do with the
the blue on the marquee of the bullpen.
Okay.
Matching with that white and then the blue on the top of the Volans building also.
Anyone? Pat, you seem to be, you know, you seem to have really spent a well, no, because you have the history here and you've spent quite a bit of time with this over the years, and this isn't anything new. So now we have a chance to go through it again and potentially tighten things up. That is, businesses move forward, there's more consistency and standards with what everybody's trying to achieve, and then, you know, have an overall consistent pattern going up Metcalf.
Yeah, so that's exactly the reason why, believe it or not, I was actually kind of trying to bite my tongue a little bit because I was here for the, I guess I got on the Planning Commission just after the first guidelines were created and we tweaked them a little bit. And so I don't want to drive the whole conversation of it. The main thing for me is the modulation. It's just like, it's like on the Volan building. The Volan building looks great from what I can see going by, except I don't understand why they painted the slanted blue thing on the side, unless they were trying to hide the step back, the step downs on the side street. And you can still see them. And it's not the color of the sky. And on a cloudy day, it's not the color of the sky. So I don't really understand why they did that, that color wasn't necessary. So anyway, I don't know. I always shy away from being too restrictive. I would just say that if you're being true to Art Nouveau and you're following the being sensitive to the modulation of the buildings on either side of you, if they are Art Nouveau, then you are probably going to come up with a pretty good building. I guess that's the guiding thing, and then that's up to the director. John's perfectly capable of telling them, that hey, your bottom window mullion's coming in at halfway up their window over the next to it. Can you try and tame that a little bit and get it more modulated, similar to that, or is that going to make your design impossible? Or blah blah blah. And the same with colors and all of that. So anyway, I just tend to shy to the side of giving as much freedom to the person who's doing the design as possible, and to the planning directors to work it out with them. That's where I am on most things.
You know, over the coming year, it's going to be important because I believe there's that one vacant lot from the fire. So we're probably going to get a brand new structure there. So it's going to be really important to whoever designs that building to have some type of visibility on what we're looking for, because architects are expensive and building design is expensive. And at the end of the day, that's going to be right on a pretty main corner. So it's important that what gets done there is consistent with the vision of what we're trying to put together here. Are we ready to move on to doors? And I'm sorry, John.
That's a really important point, because you know, there's nothing in here right now that says you need to build a brick building or include any brick in your building. So somebody could build, the way our current design standards are, it seems like somebody could build something that looks like, I don't know, something at a strip mall.
Right.
There's, I don't know that it's strong enough as it was currently written. We're working on it now, but that's exactly what you want to think about as you're reviewing these is, hey, when that building gets rebuilt at the corner, we want it to look historic, or we want it to look Northwest style, or we want it to look, you know, if we have a vision for what we want to look for, or at least a vision for what we don't want it to look like, mm-hmm. we got to make sure that it's in there. You know, we're right now we're seeing the new building going in across from the old Ford dealer where the sinking house was. And that's the best we could do with their design standards is to allow that. I mean, it kind of has a storefront, you know, on the front. And then from the side that you see it from mostly, that storefront is clearly false. So I want our design standards to give our staff the ability to say, hey, no, you just need to do this. You need to either use brick or wood or whatever. That building's not bad, but there's a couple of, you know.
Yeah, it's, yeah. Yeah, it's here not, I am, it's, the person who said let them do their thing, but then
we that, wouldn't that want that in our right on Metcalf Street for sure.
No.
So just a reminder as you're going through this, think of that's probably a really good exercise. You know, what do we want to see at the corner of Metcalf and Woodworth, and then also filter. You know, what do we want at the old Ford dealership when that eventually redevelops?
Yeah, it's going to be big.
That's what I try to do. You know, imagine what we would want, you know, maybe over at the Ford dealership, the Northwest style, like kind of like the library would fit in, or City Hall. Whereas on Metcalf Street, that's, you know, that's the Planning Commission's vision. If you want something like City Hall to be okay downtown, then we're great. If the Planning Commission thinks it should look historic, like the Gateway Building, you know, then we're clearly going to have some specific standards for Metcalf Street downtown. But, you know, we never did in the past, and we've got a nice mix of buildings downtown. So now I'm bringing the devil's advocate part of this. Like, do we need to have anything special? So it's really just what the Planning Commission thinks is going to be appropriate in that downtown area. Just keep that in mind as we go through these. And we can move on to the next section.
Yeah, I guess at the end of the day, if we're providing standards for in the CBD specifically, from everything from the type of signs and illuminated signs and just a whole host of different things, it makes sense to keep that as a distinct and unique area to keep that, again, that consistency of what we're trying to accomplish in a historic area. So, yeah, it's definitely worth not only discussing, but the refining for somebody else coming on in, especially for new construction, that they do have guidelines of what we'd like to see. And it's really not that difficult to do. There's so many different materials that you can absolutely do what we're looking to do that's not going to add any more cost than a Pacific Northwest style building or anything else.
So on your comment about the brickwork, do we want to make that more apparent? Because we talk about modulation and stuff, but I always was thinking more about, you know, accents or, you know, doors and windows versus brickwork specifically. I don't know. Is that something we can include? more specifically?
There are design standards. We can do whatever we want with them. I mean, I would, my personal preference, and I, that doesn't mean anything here, would be, you know, to see some sort of brick on the first floor or mix of first and second floors on the historic feeling part of downtown on Ferry Street. And that's based less on my personal preference. That was not the actual term. It's based on what I would expect the community to expect of us. So if we're, if you know, the planning department were to allow a building downtown that had no brick course on the bottom, you know, the first floor was just lap siding, like a typical single family house, and was four stories tall, of lap siding, and maybe it would definitely have to change materials, but it didn't have brick. I feel like I would get an earful from the community. So I want to be sensitive to what the community wants without pushing my personal preference.
You know, an example of that is looking at Iron Mountain. They're all wood up front. That there's no brick there. And actually that kind of stands out when you're coming on through, if it wasn't for the fact that it's right next to the restaurant. Well, BYK, that's all glass there. But consistency going forward, especially for new construction, yeah. Yeah, especially if we're looking for brick style on the lower floor or second, both first and second floors. You know, we're not going to put anything in, you know, in writing tonight, so to speak. So this is just putting out a lot of ideas. Are we ready to move on to doors?
Eric,
and
Eric's windows? Got his hand up, I think.
What's that?
Eric. Mr. Johnson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a different view. Go for it.
So, yeah, I'm going to piggyback off of what John had to say. I think that it's important to at least have a brick dominant standard for buildings. As nice as Northwest style architecture is and how it's relevant to the fact that, well, we live in the Northwest, I don't think it has any real relevance to the downtown corridor. And for me, you know, in my background, I'm all about precedent. So you set a precedent of something not that's quote unquote historic to Cedar Woolley downtown, and which is predominantly brick buildings, you know, you kind of open up the door for other options. And so I think whatever we decide on has to be somewhat brick dominant. I'm not saying it necessarily has to be an entirely brick building. I think that it does have to have that dominance though, because that's kind of the, not only the motif of downtown, but it's also the historic heritage of downtown. And I think John's absolutely right. The backlash that you would get from the community is that people want it to be consistent. People are going to want it to feel like historic Cedar Woolley as they conceptualize it. And so, you know, having other materials be the dominant feature of the exterior of buildings and in the downtown corridor, at the very least, I'm talking about just primarily Metcalf, maybe a little bit of Ferry, you know, has to have that feel. I apologize. I'm a little bit at a struggle because I'm trying to figure out a way to word the fact that what I think in talking with people is that they want like that historic feel, but at the same time, you know, allow for a little bit of creativity. I don't know if that's creativity within accents or, you know, kind of the detail of buildings. So it kind of has like more of a historic base with kind of a little bit more of a modern flair that fits with it. I don't know, but I definitely think that at the very least, there has to be that consistency throughout downtown Cedar Woolley.
And what do you mean by downtown? Just to finish up on that thought.
By downtown, I mean primarily like Metcalf Street. So from like Warner all the way up to, what would that be? Northern, just south of Northern. That whole corridor right through there. I would probably throw in that small section of Metcalf from the railroad over to Murdoch. Sorry, trying to think of all the streets here. Because that's still kind of downtown in a way. It still has that feel and that characteristic. And then I'd throw Woodworth all the way through from the museum all the way over to the railroad. That's how I conceptualize downtown.
Silas, you're up.
I tend to agree with the desire for brick buildings. I just think we need to be careful about how we word things because from 1900 to 1930, downtown Cedar Woolley was almost entirely wood, from my understanding. And it wasn't until the 30s that the majority of the brick buildings were built. And so when we're talking in here about, shooting for an, sort of referencing an era, we need to be careful about how we do that or at least be aware of that because true historic Cedar Woolley buildings oftentimes were wood. And my understanding is there was a big fire and they all burned down and that's when all the brick buildings were built. And so I do think that having at least Commissioner Johnson said, a brick dominant sort of, whether it's the first story or the first, 15 or 20 feet of the building or whatever it is, I think fits sort of within the current view of downtown. And like we said, what people might expect a new building in the downtown core to be, but I was just reading through, I can't remember exactly where it was, but there was a couple references to that 1900 to sort of 1930s era. And anyway, I just want to be aware of, or at least cognizant of that as we tune this thing in or dial it in.
If we're talking about the first story, well, the ground level in particular, I see a lot of people want to put a lot of glass in, right? So we're going to get down into this, to the doors and the windows. So integrating that with a stone front, do we want to limit the amount of glazing instead of looking like a Macy's front door, frontage? Or do we want to just leave it open as long as there's brick on maybe first and second levels? I see a lot of glass going in all over the place. So you could literally eliminate almost the entire front of the building if you're just going straight glass.
Are you referring to second stories? Like no, a second story?
Ground level. If they just want pretty much all, the sides are going to be brick, but do we want to limit the amount of glazing? Is in, you could have a whole glass front, kind of like Oliver Hammer, or are we just going to keep that consistent, that it's the building we're talking about, not necessarily certain levels, that would not be brick. It could be a totally different material.
So I was pretty strongly going to include a requirement for storefront windows on commercial streets and commercial buildings, because the way the downtown is, and encourage and require to wrap around the corner on, say, the new building. The Janicki building doesn't have a lot of windows that go down Woodworth, nor does the building that was most recently the library building. It doesn't have any windows going down Woodworth, but the last remaining building in that corner does have a fair amount of windows down there. And so that was something to encourage walkability and shopping in the CBD. I was going to be putting a 50 to 75% storefront window requirement. Try to be reasonable about it. You know, it can't all be windows, I get it. But the new building on Ferry lacks the storefront image that one would expect for a downtown storefront. So I wanted to see more than that.
I'm a glass fan myself. I mean, you could do so many really nice things with different types of glazing. I just wanted to bring it up to make sure it's consistent with everything else. Commissioner Maddox.
So now that we're talking about glass, under standards number one, these are the new standards, I guess, in red. Under the glazing, it says a minimum of 50% of exterior glass surfaces be multi-paned or gridded. And that's super I have a few thoughts about this, but first of all, that it seems unclear because I don't know how you define multi-paned. I mean, any window over a certain size ends up being multi-paned because the panes of glass only get so big. So, and then gridded windows, they can be done well if they're like old fashioned style steel frame or aluminum frame, you know, whatever they are. But I wouldn't want to end up with modern double pane windows that have the grids inside of them, because almost universally those look like really cheap and poorly, you know, I don't know why anybody, that's a personal pet peeve of mine, but I don't think it has any place in a commercial setting. I just think that needs to be tightened up a little bit. I do like the no less than 65% glass display windows. So I'm in favor of a lot of glass. I think that, anyway, so I don't know if John, if you had an idea about this or if there's something I'm missing or whatever, but
I can give you background and that's it. The multi-pane and gridded was taken directly from the existing language and just inserted here in this new format. That didn't change. So that was an existing thing. If I think that needs to be clarified, first of all, because this is going to be first floor. Like we want 65, you know, the minimum of 50% exterior glass. Well, first of all, that's out of order. That we should talk about first, it should be storefronts and facades shall consist of no less than 65% glass display windows with trim, da da da. I think the minimum of the exterior glass surface be multi-paned or gridded. I don't know how that would look.
Storefront windows shouldn't be gridded. I would personally say that there's I'm spacing out on the technical terms for it, but there's mullions, which are divisions within a pane, and then there's true divided, which are actually individual panes of glass or something. and we should probably check my terminology, but I don't think we want gridded in there. I think that we want to make sure that if glass surfaces are multi-pane, they're either, I think the term is true divided or else mullioned, but anyway, I can't, it's been a little while since I had to deal with that in a technical aspect, but gridded just brings up views of like, you know, suburban or, you know, tract home developments that have those cheap plastic grids inside of the windows, and they don't make anything look better. So, but in keeping with sort of the commercial high quality feel of it, the windows need to be designed thusly. But I also wouldn't tend to limit the size of the panes. I mean, anyway, I don't know where else to go with that right now, but.
Commissioner Freiberger.
So what I thought of when I saw that about gridded windows is there are quite a few examples on First Street in La Conner of that. And I actually just pulled up Google Street View on that street and was just going down, and it's debatable as to whether that's a look we want, but definitely smaller panes, and some of them are actually, each one is a separate pane, and it can be very expensive for them to be replaced. We had an owner who was looking at that, and it was quite costly to do, so that's something to keep in mind as well. Now, I suppose there's a false look to that where it just looks like they're divided panes and they're not actually there, not truly divided. But yeah, if you're wondering about examples, there's a lot in on First Street there.
Commissioner Huggins.
All right. So we moved topics really, really quickly. So one, I support the mostly brick. I agree with that. And one of the charms of Cedar Valley's Main Street was that it was one of the few cities in Washington that survived intact. You know, most of them had fires, and then they never got their brick buildings back. So they had a lot of holes. Cedar Valley had a Main Street whenever it was built that was mostly brick facades, and I wouldn't want to see those slowly go away and be replaced by wood or something else. The second thing was that I support the 65% glass requirement, and grids are usually colonial and federal, and this is Art Nouveau. So, I mean, I'm sure you could break it into smaller panes, but it, hopefully it's not the god-awful white true separation ones like they have in the Northeast where my wife is from. So anyway, yeah, let's keep it Art Nouveau and less. And most of those buildings were built, you know, in the 30s were built as, you know, as storefronts. And so they already had a lot of glass in them. And so I think that we want to, you know, the modulation is already set up for large glass windows. They just have the knee wall underneath them that can be brick or stone. So yeah, that was a, the main things. I just wanted to support the bricks, support the glass, and I don't think we have a problem if we stick Art Nouveau with them being the colonial and federal white trimmed little tiny panes of windows with little panes of glass. Yeah, thank you.
Commissioner Penno.
So going back also, I just want to let everybody know that the July Great Fire of Cedar Valley was July 24th in 1911. And all of the buildings were wood, and 25 of them burnt down. And it was within that year that they rebuilt them all, almost all in brick. So in 1911, 1912 is when brick hit. But also I am for the brick. I like the brick. And I'm pretty good with the window situation. I agree with Pat on the little squares that look colonial. I wouldn't care for that either. But in that being said, I think what Silas was talking about, when you say grid, and I know I don't like those plastic ones either. Actually, I have sliding glass doors that have that right now. But like the old doors in a Victorian house, you had your like 15 panel glass. I mean, that would still be considered, in my opinion, Art Nouveau. Maybe not. Maybe if you painted it white, it would look more colonial. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know about the brick when we were built in brick, because I think that makes a difference to the style that we've mostly had.
Anyone else? Commissioner Frenette.
I second what Stacy just said. I'm all for the brick, and I was just reading an article. Incidentally, this Saturday would be 110 years ago of that fire. But it says, after the fire, several insurance carriers demanded that the former wood frame buildings be replaced with brick structures and firewalls erected between them. So I don't know what the new rules are on firewalls or separations between buildings, but if they're building right smack up against that brick building on the corner there, I would think that you would want brick or fire separation of some sort.
Definitely requires fire separation when built up to a property line. Typically, that's not going to be visible, so they'll use something cheap like cinder block. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I second or third or fourth the brick.
I haven't heard anything. Everybody, I believe, supports the brick construction, at least on the first and second floors. Anyone else?
Yeah, so I guess that just brings us to, you know, how much is the first floor enough brick? I mean, a 3 or 4 story brick building is going to be, sorry, my phone was ringing. I had to stop that. I still have a landline. A 3 or 4 story building that's all brick might not look as good as, and certainly not as contemporary and easy to build as a building with, you know, cement board on the second, third, and fourth story is what we would typically see. But knowing the local developers, they're not going to have any heartache about being required to do brick or have some historic look on the first floor. But as if we start requiring them to go up to the third and fourth floor, we may see some pushback.
Commissioner Huggins?
This is where the modulation thing comes in that I was talking about. So I would say, because most of the buildings downtown that are the Art Nouveau are at least 2 stories, and one of them, I guess one of the 3 stories burned. But anyway, I would say that we definitely want to go brick 2 stories. And then, you know, if we had more 3 stories, I would have said 3 stories. And then at 3 stories, the weird thing happens anyway, because unless you're sky gazing, your eyes only take in up to about the third floor. So beyond that, a change is actually probably a good thing, or at least not going to be, it's not going to be in your main vision. And so it won't be a part of your image of the downtown as you're walking down the street. So I would say at least 2 for brick, just to stay in consistent with the other buildings along the street.
Commissioner Maddox.
I agree with that generally. I wonder if it might be more useful to, instead of mandating 2 stories, because the commercial floor, or the first commercial story, is going to be a tall story anyway. Like, mm-hmm. I think you're required to have like 12-foot ceilings or something. I don't know exactly or how it shakes out, but it might be that like whatever's on that same plane as the first story. So if it goes up 2 stories and then steps back, or, you know, if it only went up 1 story, but it was a tall first story and then stepped back, it might be appropriate to have a different material, on the section that wasn't on the exact street level. Does that make sense? I feel a little bit like I'm not speaking super clearly about what's in my head, but John, do you understand what I'm saying?
I caught the first half, and then I think I got lost. I was understanding when you set up to say the building next door has brick on the first and second stories. So using the, you know, if we put in requirements that the modulation requirements saying, so, well, if there's brick on two stories in the building next door, you should go brick on two stories on this new building too. And then then you were talking about step backs, which I also think makes a lot of sense. Say, if it steps, if you step the building back, then you're, you know, no point in doing brick any longer. I don't know how many step backs we're going to see because that construction type gets a little tricky when you put your plane of the wall in a few feet. Now you have to figure out how to support that wall. Sure. So it complicates the structure on a, you know, two or three story building. But go from there. I would like you to explain a little further.
Well, I think that was the gist of it, was just that, like, assuming that the facade of the building is built out to the property line, which would be like storefront, sidewalk, mm-hmm. that vertical plane, like whatever's in that vertical plane in the first two stories has to be brick. And then, but it might, if there was a situation where the building, only the first story was on that plane, and then the second story stepped back, that maybe it would be allowed that the second story would be of a different sort of exterior finish material. So, but I do appreciate the language about just matching, like if there's an all brick building that's two or three stories tall, that you have to sort of match that. So I don't know how to word that exactly.
Commissioner Huggins?
Yeah, I understand Silas is saying. That's a good thought. Also, there's, unfortunately, I don't have the wording and I haven't looked at the Snohomish and the other things to do it, but if you look at some of the new Northwest style buildings and in older cities that are multi-block downtowns, you know, where you have a consistent theme for more than one block, they make, usually the owners of the buildings probably just did it. Because I don't think they had design standards back then or building code requirements, but they made the buildings on the corners were usually more articulated, you know, because they had the corner. I guess the best example I can give of that is half of it's gone now, but the building that was last Los Pasanos was Seattle First National Bank before that. And, you know, it's oriented, has a little cutoff on the corner and it goes up, I believe it's three stories, maybe it's just two. But anyway, so it had awnings that came around the front and then it had the space, which is where Santa Claus's booth was when I was a kid. It sat right there in that niche on the corner. But anyway, the point I'm making is that they made them put some emphasis, or they just realized that they had to have some emphasis there on the corner facing that street because it's being looked at on two directions by everybody at the intersections. While they're waiting to cross the streets. And then it'd be good if they didn't, like the building that just burned down there, it faced Metcalf, but it had nothing facing Woodworth. And in most cities where there's multi-block buildings with the style right up to now with the new Northwest style, they would make it so that it faced or it was designed so that I'm not wording myself well tonight now all of a sudden, so that you fronted both streets. You didn't just cut one off and make it a blank brick wall. You had to face both the side street and the main street that you were doing. So anyway, those are two things that we need to think about because we have three of those intersections. We have the State Street, Metcalf Street intersection, which would be a great place to have that emphasis. We have the Woodworth Metcalf Street intersection where it would be good to have the corner lots be, well-designed facing both streets. And then we have the Ferry Street, Metcalf Street is another one where you would want to do that, make it like a node. I guess we call them art nodes in architecture. And then I would suggest that the code go all the way on down Metcalf Street as we build new buildings, at least just on Metcalf Street, with the same theme as whatever we come up with for the downtown. I think the City Hall fits in just fine. And if you look at Stiles and Stiles, and you look at Mullen and Oaks, those buildings have a lot of class in them, and they fit Art Nouveau style, and that kind of stuff could be going down the rest of the way down Metcalf Street. So a lot more stuff. And I'm sorry, I don't have ideas. Maybe I can come up with some ideas or pictures or wording to give to you to express what I tried to.
You know, Woolley Market kind of fits a lot of the things we're talking about with the amount of glass as well as the existing brick. So what would be good, I guess, as we move on through here is to actually look at specific buildings as examples of how we want to codify that going forward, because we have some great examples already. So why reinvent the wheel, and go off of something that's already worked and it's consistent with what our vision is. Anyway, I think, did anybody else have their hand up? Do we want to still move on now to, we've got a lot to think about, granted, onto sign design. Draft amendments to the sign design section have not yet been proposed. So it's an open slate here, people.
Well, yeah, there's nothing to look at there. So nothing really to comment on.
Like I said, it's an open slate.
I do have a comment though, if it's appropriate, just kind of doing what was done with the above sections and taking those three items in the boxes there and making them into basically, it looks like you already started with that, either standards or guidelines, just changing the formatting on that and
I plan to borrow liberally from other jurisdictions' signs.
So we're talking about intent, standards, and guidelines is what you're speaking to, right?
You talking to me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now that not three specific things within standards, just that format.
Well, yeah. I was just looking at items 1, 2, and 3 that's under the guidelines that are in blue there that don't have anything added in there, and just thinking, though those will probably be put into a format similar to the others where, I don't know, it's just, I think they can be reworked to be clearer about what's being looked at there. But I don't know, it might just be a,
what's that? Can you give an example, like pick number 2, what specifically would you like to see how that would be potentially reworded or?
And those three requirements used to be requirements. Those were standards. And then 8 or 9, 10 years ago, council changed all the shells to be shoulds, made it guidelines.
Yeah, the original layout of the document was, here's our intent, and then standards were things you absolutely had to do, and guidelines were like, choose from this menu or we would like to see these things, and that I think it didn't work to say we'd like to see these things, so.
Well, maybe that's not practical then. I was item 2, I don't know that it would need to be reworded specifically that one, but I was just thinking taking it out of the boxes because it's, so it's more of an aesthetic thing, I guess.
Don't worry about formatting stuff yet. We've made no attempt to address the sign section.
Yeah.
All we did is threw in those placeholders, standards and guidelines.
Yeah.
Commissioner Huggins, I thought you had your hand up just a second ago.
I was just going to piggyback on your comment about the Woolley Market, and I was going to say that the another really good example in town that we can use is it's old, but at the Wixon Hotel, which is, some people know as the Gateway Building, it addresses both streets. It addresses Ferry Street and it addresses Metcalf Street. In fact, sometimes it's hard to tell which one of those streets would be the main entrance if there was a main entrance to the hotel, if it was still a hotel. That's what I'm talking about, addressing both streets. And then the one place that kind of missed the boat in my mind is just that corner that faces the intersection would have been a great, you know, place for some kind of special feature. You know, today that would be the big screen, massive big screen New York Times Square TV or something, I suppose. But you know what I'm saying, that there's a special feature on that corner. So that's all I was going to add.
That code, that screen would not be consistent with our new code on illuminated screens. Anyone else? Okay, we have a lot to think about. So would we like to move on to Planning Commission discussion and information items? John, I know you had quite a bit to say, and I'd love to hear what's going on in Planning and Development Services right now myself. Are we good with that? Move on? Okay, let's do it. You got the floor.
So you've given me a lot to digest and synthesize into the design standards. So thank you for such a detailed and thoughtful discussion. We made a lot of progress today. I hope I took good enough notes because, wow, I got a lot of work here. So then just kind of nuts and bolts of stuff. So I'm thinking in next August, we're still going to be by Zoom for a couple of purposes. One is I won't be in town, so I won't be here to open up the building for everybody. So it's just basically a logistical thing. I'm not sure where the council is going to be in August, if they're going to be having it in person yet. There's that's something that's going on at a much higher level, and we'll just wait to see. But August Planning Commission's going to have to be by Zoom, or I won't be there and won't be able to have a meeting. And then, of course, we lost Catherine. She's done working at the office, and she's preparing for her big trip. So she's too busy. Surprise, surprise, she didn't show up tonight. That would have been kind of funny if she showed up on Zoom, but she did not. We just today received, we had made an offer to a new assistant planner, and just today received letter from her stating that yes, she's accepting the job and she'll be starting in early August. And her name is Nicole McGowan. So you'll get to meet her soon, maybe not in person for a little while, but our office is open. So it is possible to come by and harass the planning department now if the Planning Commission so chooses. No more than three at a time, otherwise we have a quorum though. So come by, say hi. Michelle would love to see you. We'd like to see you. It's been a long time since we've been face to face with any of the Planning Commission members. So fortunately we do this by Zoom, so I still remember what you look like at least. Then just in general, updates with the what's going on is there's so much building activity going on. It's hard to even remember all of the projects. The RJ Group building over at Stendal and Hodgen is under construction. They've started the footing and underground plumbing on that. So that one's moving ahead. That's in the urban village mixed use. And then we still, there's another one at the corner of Trail and Stendhal that is a little bit smaller. It's a 67 unit mixed use. That's through BYK. And they submitted revised plans recently. So that one is still moving forward. And then you've probably seen the Pioneer Marketplace building addition. On the southern end of that, there's the part of the building they don't use that's proposed to be taken down because it's vacant now. And you'll probably hear about that one because that one's going to affect downtown a lot. So I wanted to let you know that, you know, there's a CBD. It's commercial on the main floor, and I think it's 3 stories, 17 units on the upper floors total. And there's public notice out on that.
The
Pioneer Marketplace, you know, the southern part of that building is actually unused, the side that faces State Street. Mm-hmm. It's only about 20 feet wide, the part that they don't use. Next time you go by, you'll see like, oh yeah, look at the roof. One part. And then there's a separate section that doesn't have nice new roofing. And so that would be removed, and a brick building with commercial on the downstairs facing State Street and the parking lot, and then residential above. So that's the big downtown thing going on that you've probably heard about because people have been asking about it.
In general, by the end of the year, how many new single family detached houses do we have going in? Doc Campbell has that massive one down.
Doc Campbell is not involved in that. He sold that property before it ever got subdivided.
So that's how many units, how many single family?
That's 85 lots. And that's BYK, and they're 55 and over.
And in total citywide, because we got a lot of stuff going on, what are we looking at? Maybe about 150 units?
Single family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
About, right? And then on the multifamily.
I should know, but we've it's hard to have a crystal ball to know if they're going to continue to do, you know, 4 starts a month at each of these projects. Because, you know, we still have Cambridge Commons going, building. They're not slowing down. You've seen the new trail road connection, which is actually the western leg of Garden of Eden Road. You know, where Garden of Eden comes down off the hill and dead ends at Jones Road. Now it no longer dead ends. It continues through.
Right.
And they're building houses there, and they're doing, 4 starts a month. Is that maybe more?
We're looking at probably close to 2,000 or more new residents within the next 18 months.
Estimate? But, you know, it's within our growth expectations. Over the past 3 years, we're just a skosh over the anticipated pace of growth. And so, you know, these things go in fits and spurts.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, if we're a little bit over now, that we can expect a slowdown at some point.
Yeah,
it's not going to continue like that for 20 years, no. You know, because that's a 20-year projection. But, you know.
I'm sure glad it waited this long to happen. It was supposed to happen in 2003. And we had a sewer moratorium, and that gave us almost 8 years to get our ducks in a row, because our old design standards would have allowed basically anything goes, the old stuff from 1995. So anyway, the onslaught is here now, but I think we're as so much better prepared than we were in 2001 when I went on. I hope we get some good results. We'll see.
Commissioner Frenette.
John, maybe you can answer this. Several years ago, we were granted $30 million to put John Liner through to whatever it is out here, West Jones, and they're going to do the tunnel there, close SAP, and put in a roundabout at Trail Road and Cook and go through the school yard there over to FNS Grade. I haven't seen any iota of that yet. Is that still going to happen?
So we did not get $30 million. We requested $30 million to do all of that, and we didn't get it. Not surprisingly, right? You know, it was a long shot, but, you know, you heard all the pilings being driven for over at the railroad about a month ago. They spent a week and a half driving pilings so they can build a tunnel under the railroad tracks to connect Jones to John Liner. We still need to find money to build the actual build and finish design of that underpass. But Mark Freiberger is working on it and making great steps. And then you were talking about the continuation of Jones, John Liner down through the schoolyard, the facilities building. That's not going to work. There's some technical and financial problems with that. So that road is you see it, the first section has been built, Trail Road that I was just explaining a few minutes ago, has been built. Then there'll need to be a connection from there south through, you know, a couple of properties there. And then there's the Bucco plat, the Bucco property. They have an active application for 65 lot subdivision in the Bucco property. And that will continue that trail road through, not through the schoolyard though, but through the Bucco property. It'll actually have to carry east a little bit, unfortunately. And then make its way to Cook Road and come out around, right around the physical therapy place. So that's the road alignment that Public Works Department has been working on now.
Okay, and is there was word of a gas station going in at Cook and Trail, is that true?
Yeah, we have an approved building permit for that, and they're working on either financing or, you know, some other last details of that before they pick it up and start building.
And if I can add one more thing, one of my biggest concerns was Cook Road backups. It's getting worse and worse. I remember commenting that we need some way to get to the freeway. And there was talk about the state coordinating with our growth to help the traffic. And I haven't seen any activity there at all. But if you don't get to Cook Road before 6:30, you wait quite a while to get over the railroad tracks.
In the morning?
Yeah, yeah. And coming home, not much easier.
Yeah, so the regional transportation planning, the SCOG plan, the SCOG transportation people are working on the regional stuff, but that is the Cook Road is a county issue, and because of its nexus with the interstate, it actually involves the state because they manage that intersection up to Old 99.
Commissioner Huggins.
I was just going to say the way you did, as soon as you say you're going to put a moratorium and you're not going to build anything, then they will start finding a way to get money to you. But as long as you keep building, they will do it. The same with the sewer. As soon as we had the sewer moratorium, they started throwing money at us to, with Mark's help. I'm not downplaying what Mark had to do to get it. But once you applied for it, you got it. Once you said, we're not building anything until we get this problem solved. And so transportation is the same thing. If you just say too much traffic, can't do it, they will, and you apply for the grants, you'll start getting them.
I heard
there is a large regional effort to fix that Cook Road intersection. Everybody in the county knows it's a problem, and they're working on it. It's just a tough nut to crack with the railroad there, because even if you get the stoplights working, flowing well, where it doesn't back up any traffic, you throw in a train and everything comes, you know, all your transportation planning comes crashing down at the mercy of the railroad.
Yeah. The mercy of the railroad. And it is.
You don't want to be at the mercy of the railroad.
Mercy of the railroad. Okay. Is there anything else, anyone? This would be your time. This is a great conversation. Nothing? Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn? Someone?
So moved.
Okay. I have a motion to adjourn, I believe, from Commissioner Maddox, seconded by Commissioner Petto. Meeting is now adjourned at 8:12 tonight. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks for everyone.
Thank you, John. Thank you, everyone.